I'd like to welcome you on behalf of the Howison Lecture in Philosophy. As you know, our lecturer this evening is Michel Foucault. Obviously, I don't really have to say much about him. Very many people clearly are very interested in what he has to say. For anybody who got swept up in here without knowing, I'll say a few things nonetheless. Michel Foucault is the holder of the chair of the history and systems of thought at the Collège de France, which, as you probably know, is the most prestigious academic institution in France. It's all very paradoxical, since Michel Foucault, although certainly prestigious, is not at all an ordinary kind of academic. He is suspicious of all the official titles and the claim to disinterested truth that has been associated with academia. It's odd, too, that he's a professor of something like the history of ideas or of systems of thought, since you probably know, too, if you've read The Archaeology of Knowledge, he's very suspicious and attempts to undermine our usual notion of history as some kind of continuous march of events or some uncovering of some truth which is gradually emerging or any other idea of history that anyone has ever had. And as for history of ideas, he's equally suspicious of and denies the importance of ideas in the direction of human affairs or as having any important effect on human practices. In his latest book, The History of Sexuality, it turns out that ideas serve something else called power, and not that ideas are in any way controlling factors. The books that are the main ones that you probably already know and have been translated and studied and assigned and discussed a lot are his first important book, Madness and Civilization, and come in. After that, The Birth of the Clinic. As you may or may not realize, but you will now, that there's a mob of people out all around there trying to get in here. And Michel Foucault has made the suggestion, by the way. He says this is a very technical lecture and difficult, and I think he wants to imply boring, and he suggests that that it would be better for everyone to leave now than to leave bit by bit during the lecture, or perhaps to listen in shifts, that you could listen for, say, half an hour till you're bored, and then the other 800 people out there could come in and listen for the second half hour. But I guess we'll just have to go ahead with the people beating down the doors. After the order of things comes The Archaeology of Knowledge, which is Foucault's book of methodological reflection on what he's done up to that point. Then there's a six-year hiatus in which there are some interviews, but no major books. And it seems to me very fundamental changes take place in Michel Foucault's approach during that time. And finally, since that period, he's published two more books that are translated, Discipline and Punish, The Birth of the Prison, and the latest book available around here, The History of Sexuality. I understand there's already another book available in French, which is the second volume of this seven-volume projected History of Sexuality, which is on the view of sexuality among the church fathers. Now, it's very hard for me to convey how puzzling and paradoxical Michel Foucault is, but I found something that expresses it so well and so briefly that I'm just going to read it. Something written by Clifford Geertz in the New York Review of Books in his review of the prison book. He really captures the strangeness of all this. I'm going to quote, "Michel Foucault is a kind of impossible object, a non-historical historian, an anti-humanist human scientist, and a counter-structuralist structuralist. He writes in a terse, impacted style, which manages to seem imperious and doubt-ridden at the same time. His method supports sweeping summary with eccentric detail." Then he quotes Foucault, "Do not ask who I am, and do not ask me to remain the same," he writes in the introduction to the Archaeology of Knowledge. Leave it to our bureaucrats and our police to see that our papers are in order. At least spare us their morality when we write. And then Geertz concludes, whoever he is, or whatever, he is what any French savant is, or wants to be these days, elusive. And that seems to put him in a bag with a lot of other rather shady characters. But then Geertz goes on, and I think this is very important. And he says, but, and in this he differs a good deal, that has been going on in Paris since structuralism arrived. The difficulty of his work arises not from self-regard and the desire to found an intellectual cult only the instructed can join, but from a powerful and genuine originality of thought. Now, I think that is what has brought us all here. There is something very original and very disconcerting in what Michel Foucault does. It doesn't sound like ordinary philosophy. It isn't what one comes to expect from a philosophy lecture. It certainly won't be like any of the previous Howison lectures. But what Foucault does, it seems to me, is constantly call into question what we are and what we are doing to ourselves in our social practices. And he does this by taking up any topic that is familiar with us in our most ordinary practices and taking them up in such a way that makes them seem strange. And it seems to me that this may be something that philosophers once did and still do. And in any case, this way of approaching things is more like philosophy than it is like anything else I can think of in the academic world. Now, before I turn the lectern over to Michel Foucault, I want to remind you that the second of these public lectures on truth and subjectivity, this time sponsored by the French department, will be held here in Wheeler tomorrow. Same time, same place, probably same crowd. And there will also be two seminars in French, in which seminars meaning chances to ask questions and discuss with Michel Foucault. Those will be Wednesday from 2 to 4 here, and a week from today, that is next Monday, from 4 to 6 in 2003 Life Sciences Building. And now it gives me great pride for the Howison Committee and great pleasure to present Michel Foucault.
Je voudrais d'abord vous remercier pour votre présence, dont je ne sais pas si je dois dire qu'elle est trop nombreuse pour les malheureux qui sont restés dehors, trop nombreuse en tout cas pour moi, car comme vous l'a dit à l'instant le professeur Dreyfus, je compte vous présenter deux conférences sur des sujets qui sont relativement techniques, et par conséquent, je m'excuse auprès de ceux qui auraient souhaité entendre ici des propos plus généraux et intéressant à la fois l'existence du monde et leur vie particulière. Les choses étant ce qu'elles sont, je remercie d'autant plus les personnes qui ont bien voulu m'inviter, et à dire vrai, il paraît que je dois commencer par remercier les institutions, alors je remercie donc le comité des Howison Lectures, le Comité for Arts and Lectures, le Graduate Council, le département de philosophie, le département de français, et ma foi surtout et au fond avant tout, mes amis Berthe Dreyfus et Léo Bersani. Well, now shall begin. In a work consecrated to the moral treatment of madness and published in 1840, a French psychiatrist, Leheret, tells of the manner in which he has treated one of his patients. Treated and, as you can guess, cured. One morning, he takes his patient, let's call him Mr. S, he takes Mr. S, his patient, into a shower room. He makes him recount in detail his delirium. Well, all that, says the doctor, is nothing but madness. Promise me not to believe in it anymore. The patient hesitates, then promises. That's not enough, replies the doctor. You've already made me similar promises, and you haven't kept them. And he turns on a cold shower above the patient's head. Well, yes, yes, I am mad, the patient cries. The shower is turned off. The interrogation is resumed. Yes, I recognize that I am mad, the patient repeats. But, he adds, because you are forcing me to do so. Of course, another shower. Well, says the patient, I assure you, however, that I've heard voices and seen enemies around me. Another shower. Well, then, says Mr. S, I admit it. All that is madness. I am mad. And of course, he was cured. To make someone suffering from mental illness recognize that he is mad is a very ancient procedure in traditional therapy. To such an extent was one convinced of the incompatibility between madness and recognition of madness. And in the medical works of the 17th and 18th centuries, one finds many examples of what one might call truth therapies. The mad would be cured if one managed to show them that their hallucinations are without relations to reality. But the technique used by the French psychiatrist Leray is altogether different. Leray is not trying to persuade his patient that his ideas are false or unreasonable. What happens in the head of Mr. S is a matter of indifference for Leray. The doctor wishes to obtain a precise act, the explicit affirmation, well, I am mad. It is easy, of course, to recognize here the transposition within psychiatric therapy of procedures which have been used for a long time in religious and also in judicial institutions. To declare aloud and intelligibly the truth about oneself, I mean to confess, has in the Western world been considered for a long time either as a condition for a redemption for one's sins or an essential item in the condemnation of the guilty. The bizarre therapy of Leray may be read as an episode in the progressive culpabilization of madness. But I would wish rather to take it as a point of departure for a more general reflection on this practice of confession and on the postulate which is generally accepted in Western societies that one needs for his salvation to know as exactly as possible who he is and also, which is something quite different, that he needs to tell it as explicitly as possible to some other people. The anecdote of Leray is here only as an example of the strange and complex relationships developed in our societies between individuality, discourse, truth, and coercition. The question is, what's this obligation to tell truth about oneself, which is imposed to everybody and even to the mad people, if they want to become reasonable and normal people?